Who comes to your mind when you think about someone that is despised? Especially for those of us who are middle-aged or older, we might think of an Adolf Hitler, a Joseph Stalin, leaders during the Second World War of Germany and Russia, respectively, who were responsible for the murder of literally millions of people. A more contemporary figure might be Kim Jong-un, the hostile, arrogant dictator of North Korea who seems bent on nuclear aggression no matter what. Closer to home, we might think of the man who currently occupies the highest office in our land. There are many people who think of our president with disgust. I just think of him as bombastic, as vulgar, as someone to be viewed with contempt. On a personal level, I remember some years ago being asked by a member of our church if I would get involved with a troubled young man. And a church member was just hoping that I might be able to exert some positive influence on someone he had met in a conservative political group. And I sought for a period of some months to be a friend to a fellow named Jonathan, and discovered that he was a convinced neo-Nazi. And Jonathan, very, very open, very honest about what he thought and what he believed. I generally find that to be an attractive quality, being open and honest. But I remember how difficult I found it to like Jonathan. I just found myself repulsed, as opposed to being natively drawn with a feeling of compassion. He was so mean-spirited in the attitudes that he had about African-Americans and about others. And in my own personal experience, that's the person who comes to my mind when I think of someone that I found myself feeling disgusted towards. I prayed for him. I sought to love him. But I had to struggle with those feelings of just despising what he stood for so assertively. There are people in our world that are disgusting. That's sad, but that's a reality. Perhaps you've worked with such a person. Perhaps you've known such a person in your extended family. Perhaps you've personally been mistreated by such a person. Perhaps you found elements within yourself that you have found disgusting. But the question I want to think about with you this evening is this. Would God show kindness? Would the maker of our universe show special kindness to a despicable person, to a person that we would view with disdain? Would the Lord show favor towards such a person? The short answer is yes, God does. But more needs to be said. And I invite you to think with me for a few minutes about a real historical encounter that took place about 2,000 years ago where Jesus of Nazareth engaged a despised man and showed him extraordinary kindness. This conversation took place in Palestine in the Near East in a city called Jericho. And the record of the interaction is found in the Bible in the Gospel of Luke, which is the third book in the New Testament, chapter 19, the opening 10 verses. If there's anyone here tonight who doesn't have a copy of the Bible, we would love for you to have that, and we'll give you a copy of the Bible, and we'll mark for you the passage that we're referring to tonight. But it's Luke 19, the opening 10 verses. And in that passage, our attention is drawn to a man named Zacchaeus. And like all of the populace of Palestine, apart from foreigners who were there, he was a Jewish man. And he was a Jewish man despised by his fellow Hebrews. Most regarded him with contempt. Most refused to have any social interaction with him. Many had a deep, personal sense of resentment toward this man, Zacchaeus. And the reason that there was a personal element in it for many is that they were forced on some level to have to interact with him because he was the chief tax collector in Jericho, and the people couldn't get around the business of having to pay taxes. 2,000 years ago, Israel and surrounding nations lived under the thumb of the mighty Roman Empire. And as a subjugated people, they were compelled by law, and it was enforced by military might to pay taxes. And it was something that the Jewish people deeply resented, that this foreign nation ruled over them and forced them to pay these fees. And the Roman Empire, by way of policy, would employ Jews to gather the taxes from their fellow Jews. There was money to be made in it. And that was a plum that the Roman Empire had to offer because there was a cost involved in working for Rome. You were viewed as a traitor to your own people. You were viewed as a dog by being thus willing to work for the hated Roman Empire to collect taxes. I'm sure that many of you are familiar with the rise of unions in our nation, and perhaps you've seen a documentary on TV or you've done some reading where, say, in the era where Henry Ford was really cranking up the manufacture of automobiles and GM was really cranking up, and perhaps you've read about or seen the pictures of the day coming when workers began to organize into unions in order to get some leverage, in order to insist on better working conditions. And you've probably seen a scene of a union strike where people refuse to work, again trying to get management and ownership to comply with demands that they had. And you're familiar with the idea of there being certain people who are so desperate for a paycheck that they would try to break through the union line in order to go to work. And you may remember scenes of violence that erupted, of people taking baseball bats after their neighbors because they were so concerned to maintain a solidarity that we've got to stick together. No one's going to work because we've got to stick together and insist on reformation taking place. And when people wouldn't stick together, but would break through the lines, they were viewed with contempt and often treated with very overt hostility. Well, that was the dynamic of being a Jewish tax collector in Palestine 2,000 years ago. You were viewed as a traitor. You were viewed as a dog for going to work for the Romans. Well, this was the position that Zacchaeus had. He was a tax collector. He was a chief tax collector, and he had become a very wealthy man. Tax collectors made their money through charging what Rome demanded, but then adding extra fees, which is where they drew their own income from. They had Roman soldiers that were available to force compliance on some level, and so what was generally the practice is that you had a fair amount of deceit and defraud. That was just, it was just the way things were. They were kind of like the mafia lords of their day. They made their money by preying upon their own communities. And they were understandably resented. Well, Luke 19 tells us of Jesus coming to the city of Jericho, where Zacchaeus was a chief tax collector. At this point, Jesus was a man of some fame in Palestine. His public ministry had been going on for some time, and he had performed miraculous works repeatedly, enabling the blind to see, cleansing lepers, enabling lame people to walk, and word got around. You didn't need internet, you didn't need Twitter for word to get around of how exciting it was what this Jesus was doing. Just word of mouth spread. He spoke in a way unlike any man had ever spoken. For those who heard him, it was striking, the authority with which he spoke, the penetrating character of his words, the grace and the kindness that was so conspicuous. So crowds were gathering at this point in his earthly life and work. And that's exactly what happened to Jericho. Throngs, hundreds, perhaps thousands, gathered along the main road, wanting to see for themselves this Jesus that they had heard about. Zacchaeus was part of that throng. He wanted to see Jesus. We don't know exactly what his interest was. Was it just curiosity? Was it something deeper than that? That was already going on in his soul that created a longing to be able to see for himself this Jesus. We don't know, but what Luke tells us is that Zacchaeus was part of this crowd. He wanted to look at this Jesus. He was unusually short in stature, and so he had a logistical problem. He was in the midst of a big crowd, and there were a lot of shoulders, necks, and heads that were towering above him, and he literally could not see. He couldn't see over people. And Luke tells us that this prominent, wealthy public official probably had, Luke doesn't tell us that he hiked up his robe, but we infer that he probably had to hike up his robe. What Luke does tell us is that he ran. He literally ran further down the main road and climbed up into a tree, a sycamore tree, right there by the main drag, with the thought that from that prominent place, even with the crowds, he'd still be able to see Jesus when Jesus passed by. Well, as Jesus made his way down the main road, amidst the hundreds, perhaps thousands, that were there gazing upon him, hoping that perhaps they would see some extraordinary work or hear some striking words spoken, he walks down the way and he stops right at this tree where Zacchaeus was perched. And he looks up and he sees this short man standing, perhaps, maybe sitting on a thick branch. And he calls him by name without any introduction. He simply looks him in the eye and says, "Zacchaeus, hurry down. I'm coming to your house today." How did he know the name of Zacchaeus? Well, Luke doesn't give us an explicit explanation, but we know from the larger story of the Bible that Jesus was no mere man. He was a man. He was a real man, flesh and blood, a real human who had been conceived in the womb of a teenage virgin named Mary and had been born, raised in a place called Nazareth, and now was around 30, 31, 32 years of age, a real man, but he was more than a mere man. We know from Scripture that Jesus of Nazareth was God the Son, who had lived forever, infinite, eternal, unchangeable in his being, in his wisdom, in his power. God the Son had left heaven and had come to earth, becoming a real man. And we infer that it was probably simply an expression of his omniscience, that capacity of God to know everything about everyone at all times intuitively and perfectly. Jesus knew Zacchaeus. He knew when he had been born, because Jesus was the one through whom Zacchaeus was created, because it's through God the Son that all things have been created. And he knew Zacchaeus, and he spoke to him by name, and uninvited, he told him to hurry down and show him hospitality. And then openly, before the eyes of the entire community of Jericho, Jesus walks into the home of one of, if not the most despised persons in their entire community. Nothing about Jesus is passive in this passage. He is active. He is on the march. He is seeking. He is defining and creating what is taking place. And he is, in particular, seeking Zacchaeus because he had come, among other reasons, to save Zacchaeus. That very day, He brought salvation to this wicked man. Luke 19 tells us that. That salvation came to this man, Zacchaeus. We know that he was a wicked man, not simply in the eyes of the community who viewed him as a traitor, but we know from things that he will say in this passage that he was a man who had been given to covetousness. He was a man who had lived for money and for the things that we perceive money to bring to us. We perceive money in our culture to be so significant in bringing us pleasure, in bringing us comfort, in bringing us a sense of security and safety. And Zacchaeus was very American in that sense. He had lived a life where money and the things that money can buy were huge. And he had been a covetous man. He had been a man who lusted for things that God had given to other people. He had been a man who had taken advantage of others. A man who had deliberately deceived others. He had been a thief. He had been a man who had taken what did not belong to him. He had exploited his own neighbors. He had been a grossly selfish man. Jesus gave Zacchaeus on this day the gift of faith. Jesus opened the eyes of the heart of Zacchaeus and enabled him to look at Jesus himself, enabled him to look at his own person and his own character, enabled him to look at others in an altogether new way. Jesus did what it is utterly impossible for us to do for someone else, and even ultimately for us to do for ourselves. Jesus made this wealthy, proud man profoundly conscious of how much he needed Jesus. And a man who had treasured gold and what gold can buy became, in this day, a man who treasured Jesus more. A man who had taken advantage of others became a man concerned to give to others. A man who had lied to people and who had stolen from people became deeply concerned to make things right with people that he had wronged. And he was transformed from being a grasping man to being a giving man. A self-seeking man became a Christ-seeking man. Now, we're not given details in the passage of how exactly did this happen. What exactly did Jesus do inside the home of Zacchaeus? He talked. What precisely did he talk about? We're not told those details by Luke, but Luke does tell us that salvation came to that man on that day. Zacchaeus was forgiven completely and freely of every transgression that he had ever committed. And not only was he forgiven of all wrongs, not just past, but even future, but a change was wrought inside of him, whereby a new creation was born. And for that to happen, especially to a rich man, Jesus himself said, is like a camel going through the eye of a needle. We're familiar in our culture with turnstiles where at the airport or at the subway station, only one person at a time can pass through the lever of the turnstile. It'd be like an elephant going through a turnstile. It just doesn't happen. It can't happen with man. But what's impossible for man is possible with God. And this rich, covetous, grasping man was changed from the inside out, forgiven, and made anew. We're not given a lot of details, but Luke does tell us that when Jesus summoned Zacchaeus to come down from the tree, for he was going to go to his house today, Luke does tell us that Zacchaeus joyfully received Jesus. He complied. He came down from the tree and joyfully received Jesus into his home. And it can be argued that he joyfully received Jesus is a pretty good definition for a real Christian. We do wonder if perhaps already in his soul, Zacchaeus had begun, if not actually become persuaded already, that the idea that riches can bring real happiness is a lie. That's a mirage. Perhaps he had already come to see that. There are a lot of people who have come to see that wealth and all that wealth can bring does not guarantee happiness. I may ruin my reputation here, but I'll confess, I really like James Taylor and John Denver. Guys, you know, I'm obviously an older guy now, and these are guys who in the 70s were big, and James Taylor is still a world-famous entertainer, but I appreciate people who have the vocal ability to be able to stand on a stage with just a guitar and sing, and they can really produce what I think of as a quality sound without all the fancy mixing and orchestration behind. And those are two guys who can do that, John Denver and James Taylor. And enjoying their music, I've read biographies of both guys, John Denver, James Taylor. And I tell you, there were sad reads. Sad, sad reads. Broken relationships again and again. James Taylor, long addicted to heroin in a way that almost destroyed him. Being famous and having all the money that could be imagined and all the things that money can buy, it doesn't guarantee happiness. And it certainly doesn't do anything in itself to make someone right with God and ready to die. Zacchaeus received Jesus joyfully. And Luke also tells us his subsequent response to Jesus after some minutes, some hours had been spent in his home. Luke tells us in chapter 19, verse 8, that Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, "Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold." Here's a man who had been accustomed to people saying, "Yes, sir," to him. He was the boss in Jericho. But now he's looking Jesus in the eye and addressing him as Lord. Zacchaeus had come to understand that there is a real master. There is a real boss, and it's not him. It was Jesus Christ. And he affirms that Jesus was Lord. And it's not just talk. He immediately expresses that that something deeper than words is going on. He had lived for money and the things that money had bought him. He tells Jesus he's going to take half of his entire estate, 50%. This is not a tithe. This is not something that the Old Testament law required. This is extraordinary. He's going to liquidate half of his estate, and he's going to give it all to the poor and the needy. And wherever he was conscious or aware of having defrauded someone, he was not only going to pay him back what he had wrongly taken, he was going to make fourfold restitution. If he had taken $100 from somebody, he was going to take them their $100 back plus $300 more. He's gripped not only with the sense of having done wrong, but with the sense that righteousness demanded that steps be taken to make things right. Obviously, the time spent with Jesus had an altering effect. A yearning for what Jesus could give him and had given him conquered his craving for what money could impart. And ultimately, the only thing that can conquer the cravings that mark all of us on some level in this world is coming to experience a greater craving that is holy. That is the key at the end of the day to dealing with every inferior craving. Zacchaeus had found something new to live for. Well, why would Jesus be so kind to one who had been so disgusting? Not just in his reputation, but in his life. There had been disgusting elements to who Zacchaeus was. Well, this passage, like the whole Bible, declares that the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. And I haven't taken time to read the passage, but if you take nothing else from the passage, I want you to remember that phrase, because that's the most important part of the passage. And it's tying into the storyline of the whole Bible, all 66 books. The Son of Man came to seek and to save that which was lost. God the Son left the safety of heaven. No danger of being crucified up there. He left the glory of heaven where everyone was dialed in to who He is, how wonderful He is, how great He is. He was always adored in heaven, always loved, always understood. God the Son did not leave that and come into this world to save the good people. He didn't come to help those who are helping themselves. God the Son left the safety and glory and bliss of heaven and came into a world with His eyes wide open to what awaited Him, that the race He had created would reject Him in their rebellion and would nail Him naked to a Roman gibbet outside the city of Jerusalem. He came with His eyes wide open to what the mission would entail because He was looking for lost people. Not those who found it, but those who by the grace of God become conscious that they've lost it, that they haven't had it, that they need it. The Bible tells us there's none good, no, not one. In that text, the quotation from the Old Testament that is quoted again in Romans 3 in the New Testament, that text is not a denial of anything good in this life. Because God is good, there are good things in this world. But what the text is affirming is that all of us have fallen short of the glory of God. And the main way we've done so is that natively, not one of us make much of God. By nature, there's not one of us who loves Him, who relishes Him, who wants to live for Him, who wants to know Him, who wants to serve Him. By nature, every one of us in this room, we came into this world and we lived initially as those who like a married couple where, you know, maybe the husband's respectable in many ways and brings the bacon home and keeps a roof over the house and does a lot of decent things. And yet he has other lovers. What kind of marriage is that? Well, by nature, that's me and you. Well, God made us for Himself. And we're all given by nature to have other lovers, whether we're viewed in the community or by the family as being respectable, decent folk, or otherwise. All we like sheep have gone astray. We've turned each one to his own way. Jesus did not show kindness to Zacchaeus because Zacchaeus deserved that. And Jesus showed kindness to Zacchaeus because God is disposed to show mercy to those that deserve His punishment. That is why God the Son came into this world. He came to bear in His own person the judgment of God that we deserve for our rebellion and trespasses. He went to the cross to enter into the experience of hell that whosoever would put their trust in Him would not have to experience hell themselves, though it's what is deserved by our rebellious race. Luke tells us that when the crowd saw Jesus going into the house of Zacchaeus, they all grumbled. And you have this throng of people. They're interested in Jesus on a certain level, enough to come and gawk and want to get a first-hand look at this wonder worker. But They see him walk into the house of this despised tax collector. And Luke tells us that they all grumbled, "He has gone in to be the guest of a man who is a sinner." For them, it was not a wonderful thing that Jesus had befriended Zacchaeus. To them, it was something that warranted complaint. They took offense. How do you respond to Jesus in the light of the striking kindness he showed to a despised man? Does that stir your admiration for Jesus? Or a sense of being inclined to criticize him? Do you see yourself before God as a person who needs pity that you don't deserve? Or do you think of yourself as one to whom, in some sense, God owes good things? Someone that God is likely to reward. Jesus will receive anyone, no matter what they've been, no matter what they've done. That's the best news in the universe. Jesus will receive anyone, no matter what they've been, no matter what they've done, no matter how foul, no matter how shameful, no matter how evil. Jesus will receive the Zacchaeuses of this world, and he'll do it gladly. He finds joy in being a friend to sinners. And let the community grumble all they will. Jesus delights to receive sinners. But the only people he receives are those who've come to see that they need compassion from heaven that they do not deserve. And that's a hurdle that our proud hearts won't allow us to get over unless God does something to graciously break us down. And God has ways of doing that. Jesus came to seek and save the lost. Have you responded to him as the despised Zacchaeus did? Have you joyfully received Jesus? I appreciate your willingness to give me a hearing tonight.